All music on this podcast is from Carpe Diem by The Science and Queen Jet Matus.
I'm a Yamanatara, and my pronouns are she, her.
I'm Irina Zara, and my pronouns, while I'm still pretty fluid about them, are they and them.
Welcome to the Connecting the Branches podcast.
We acknowledge that this podcast is being recorded on occupied land historically belonging to the Tongva and Tataviam people in the LA Basin.
This podcast will be heavily informed by a socially progressive lens that incorporates racial justice, intersectional feminisms, gender liberation, disability justice, and a variety of other topics.
We also want to specify that our thoughts in this podcast are spiritually informed by Gnosticism, various esoteric practices, ethnic and cultural Jewish identity, as well as various witchcraft traditions and other multi-denominational practices. Our lived knowledge of Jewish dogmatic practices, and especially schools of thought informed by Hasidic interpretation, may be limited.
And parental advisory, we say fuck.
We say fuck.
And really, the news, which we will not be talking about as much this time, makes us really want to say fuck. Not in jest, I do have something of a statement to read about that. Cool. And both Natara and I would like to say something about that at this time. So I want to come forward and verbalize this, hopefully in a way that makes sense for our listeners. I have asked that we not discuss the Israeli-Palestinian conflict / displacement and ethnic cleansing of Palestinians on this show because, number one, I have people in the conflict who could be harmed or killed and who also have to view the violence on a regular basis. And I really want you to hear and see the humanity of anyone experiencing that. And number two, I don't personally feel comfortable with the boundary of people voicing opinions on the matter if they are mostly removed from the situation. And also, additionally, I have some feelings about people voicing that opinion from stolen land themselves, which we are on currently. So this is not an attempt to censor anyone, but just to state that I prefer that topic be kept away from me in certain ways because it's deeply emotional to me and I won't have the ability to show up with my best self.
So my education is in politics and I come to the conflict from that perspective. In addition to what Irina has brought up, there is so much history and cultural values involved that may be unfamiliar to many Americans. I really think an entire foundational course would be more useful before we begin to bring in Kabbalistic concepts. Otherwise, we do a disservice to the issues.
Agreed, and thank you, Natara. So please know that when it comes to current events, we'd like to acknowledge the present moment and harm caused, but we will be choosing not to dig into this as a topic today on our show.
All right, well, so what are we going to dig into?
The other news is really terrible right now.
Yeah, I keep looking at the headlines and trying to read the stories about everything. This country, other countries, whatever, and everything is depressing. So let me kind of put forward a news story that might be worth talking about and might even be entertaining, I don't know. So people may or may not have heard, the US Capitol Police are conducting a criminal investigation related to a subpoena for information about a parody Twitter account dedicated to mocking Representative Nunez. For people who don't know who Nunez is, he's a California senator who He's a pain in the butt. He really is. He makes me embarrassed to be a Californian. He's anti everything I'm pro and pro everything I'm anti. But in 2019, he co-sponsored a bill called the Discouraging Frivolous Lawsuits Act. He has since that point proceeded to sue everybody he can possibly find, including trying to sue a bunch of Twitter accounts that are making fun of him, which of course has generated more Twitter accounts making fun of him. And apparently, during the Trump regime, he convinced or leaned on Trump to convince the Justice Department to use a secret grand jury subpoena to find out who the people behind some of these accounts were, because that's a good use of our time and resources. And so I got on kind of a kick because, like I said, I can't with the rest of the news, right? So I went poking around and I Googled Devin Nunes's mother Twitter because the account that everybody is citing is Devin Nunes Alt, which is currently going by, let's see, yes, or it's Nunes Alt, sorry, which has the name attached to it of Devin Nunes's Alt mom. So in looking for that, I also found Devin Nunes's mom, which is at @mom_Nunes. I found Devin Nunes' mom at not Devin's mom, all one word. I found Devin Nunes' cow's mom, which is the Nunes cow account, which was the original Let's Make Fun of Devin Nunes account. And there's also Devin Nunes' cow, which is Devin Cow. Actually, this may be the original one. I don't know. It's so hard to tell at this point. But in making him crazy about this, because it has, he is apparently the most sensitive senator on the face of the planet. He read a bunch of quotes from these Twitter accounts into the official record, thereby ensuring that thousands, possibly hundreds of thousands of Americans were going to know about these accounts that he would like to go away. This is the only news right now that I want to talk about. Everything else is sad and depressing. Humor sits on the tree. Humor sits on the tree of life. It absolutely does. And, you know, I think it kind of sits at that level where Hod and Netzach are. You know, it's got a little bit of each, you know. Good humor to me is always smart.
Sometimes I think you find it in Chesed, and I also do remember, at least when we're talking really, really experientially pathworking, because that the pathworking stuff can get incredibly personal. Like pathworking seems to me one of those, like, it's going to a festival with somebody where, you know, no two people are going to have the same experience, which amusingly enough, I'm not going to divulge like a whole bunch of details or names or anything on this, but within a social group I'm a part of, a big blow up happened this week, actually in regards to experiences within a particular festival, and like some of the info being conveyed was from a member of the social group who had not, I actually don't know whether or not he had attended the festival in person, but there was like a particular impression that seemed very informed about what was happening there from like an outside perspective, and then impressions from like people who had had lived experiences of attending the thing. And nope, what was great, at least from my takeaway, was like, from what I could see, I don't feel like anybody was trying to like naysay anybody else's stance on the thing, even though that's not the takeaway impression that everybody had, but like, I didn't really perceive that. You know, it was just one of those like, reality is so interesting moments. Because you can ask, you know, two or three people about the same thing and get 10 different perspectives, a la the old saying about Jews, I guess. But, you know.
Humans.
Yeah, so I've definitely had a lot of experiences with humor in Chesed, and then like the pathways where it came up a lot were interestingly a lot of the ones that I worked coming down from the upper triad. And it's partially because like the energy I think is so light up there that, and humor is very much like this, in my opinion, very much like a play on like occupying liminal spaces and like commentary on identities a lot of the time, or commentary on like shared reality a lot of the time. So it was interesting that was my takeaway on working the tree in that manner too.
Well, and that's an interesting idea or concept, because when you're coming down from the upper triad, you're crossing the abyss, but you already know the fears. And a lot of really good humor is talking about those things that we get too serious about, you know? Mm-hmm. And so if I know the fears and I've named the fears and they don't own me anymore, I can make fun of them, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, I mean, to a degree, and this can be nuanced, but like, you know, humor that has the ability to comment on harm done by systemic issues present in society, but also that kind of pokes fun at our human prejudices, is like some of the most powerful humor of the time.
Sure.
You know?
Well, and I've always been a fan of the court jester sort of thing, where they can make fun of or see the humor and the irony in the goings on. You know, I was the person in college who would read the Wall Street Journal and laugh my way through the entire thing because it was so ludicrous, because it took itself so seriously. And there is nothing funnier than someone who takes themselves too seriously. To Devin Nunez. Sure.
Yeah, that type of behavior just rightfully so deserves at least a certain level of trolling.
Yeah.
I appreciate when trolling is used to like prove a point in a way that's still connected to another person's humanity, as opposed to like trolling for the use of like fucking doxing people, you know,
right.
What I mean?
Right. No, I'm not a fan of that stuff. But yeah, like, yeah. You know, getting somebody to lighten up a little bit, or trying to and failing miserably in the case of Devin Nunez. Yeah. I do have to say, I'm sad that I'm giving this man's name so much airtime.
Right.
But really, go look at the Twitter accounts, because they are what is entertaining. We'll make sure they're in the notes. There's a saying of, if you take yourself too seriously, no one else will. You know, when you end up too serious with no lightness and just, you know, energetically dense, no one else can connect with that. In our society, we use humor also as a point of connection.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, I recently attended an online bystander intervention training.
Oh, okay.
Specifically the subject of this, and I'll also send you a link to this, because I think if anybody like wants this as a resource out there, absolutely please take this. It's pretty much a free online training, and if you're somebody with financial means, you can donate to the organization. It's run by an organization, mostly by an organization called Holla Back, and some specific talks that they do that target certain types of identity-based violence are in concert with like other groups. The one I took was specifically about anti-Asian violence, just because mm-hmm. I had been curious not only from like a current events standpoint, to just look at the numbers and find out more specifics about what really has been happening since the beginning of the pandemic. And that is one group of marginalized people where it's really been happening since the beginning of the pandemic heavily.
Yeah.
But anyway, one of the tactics covered in this training was the possibility of like using humor to diffuse or de-escalate. And it's, you know, this is something that's talked about, bystander intervention, you know, conflict mediation, obviously most types of public speaking.
Yeah, it's a point of connection. It changes the experience that everyone is having and can literally derail hostility and pull people in. I think humor does cause people to lean in if it's done well. You know, I'm also a huge fan, I would hope, obviously, of punching up rather than punching down, you know, which is why making fun of politicians is always fair game, in my opinion.
Agreed.
As long as we're making fun of them for, you know, like sensitivity or politics, as opposed to some sort of bodily characteristic, which is bullshit.
Yeah, like even, and this is why I have to take large amounts of frequent space from Twitter a lot of the time, because it really is that mix of humanity where sometimes the power is very much used for good. And sometimes it's like, oh my God, y'all are grossing me out kind of thing. But
I'm very limited in what I read on Twitter. Yeah, I'm also very limited on what I read on Tumblr. So yeah.
Yeah. Even when it comes to like certain types of approaches to high profile people or celebrities. So not like politicians and not necessarily people who have political power over others, but just kind of big name folks. Like, I'm kind of iffy about how some people get approached and dragged and constantly scrutinized on Twitter. And trust me, this is not me whining about like, oh, these kids with their cancel culture. I very much believe that there's a difference between holding somebody accountable and being an asshole.
Well, and but, I mean, celebrities for the most part are human beings who happen to have a job that a lot of people are interested in. Whereas politicians actually wield power over people, and there's a difference.
Right, exactly. And like, on the same token too, like with celebrities and high profile folks, you don't know necessarily all the details of what that person's life was like growing up, you know. Even if a person chooses to have a Twitter account, like they can be marginalized in a lot of types of ways that aren't super visible. Like there are a lot of celebrities like with physical and mental health stuff that like we don't necessarily know about until something really tragic happens, you know?
Or until they decide to out themselves, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think discussing stuff like that, and I'm glad, but like discussing, you know, mental health and neurodivergence and chronic illness and things like that, luckily has become more mainstream, especially if you're a high profile person. So
love that.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, because we want to normalize like that not everybody has to be normal. I'm not even really sure what normal is at this point, but you know, but normalizing the fact that we get to be different and not everybody has to be neurotypical and not everybody has to be the same abled and that kind of stuff. I think that that's important. And so when people who do have a high profile stand up and talk about their own experience with that, it does start to normalize it and it allows everybody to be more human.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely have brought this up in your classes. I cannot entirely remember which specific Sephora teaching this would have been like connected to, but I'm fairly certain it was like somewhere on the middle pillar at some point in one of the levels. But you
Fashion,
know
sure
there was something you brought up in a conversation once along the lines of, you know, you showing up as you in your identity can help to simply empower other people just by you existing and showing who you are in whatever way that manifests in this world.
Sounds like Tiferet to me. you know.
Yeah, it does. That's my suspicion. I don't have all my stuff in front of me, but
you know, Tiferet is the place where your authentic self, your essence, your God self sits. And yeah, you know, there's tons of quotes out there that talk about this, but yeah, essentially when I show up as human and I show up in my essence as my most authentic self or the most authentic I can be in the moment, it allows other people to do the same. It allows other people to be human. It says it's okay to be scared or feel different or not feel a part of, or, you know, to be confused or whatever. You know, whenever anybody, you know, that I'm talking to says, oh, you really seem like you have your shit together, I laugh uproariously. Because that to me is the only response to that. I realize that, you know, polite society says I'm supposed to say thank you and leave it alone. But there's something very important to me. Again, fuck polite society anyway. But
I was about to say that. I was like, which one of us is going to say it first? Let's see.
We could do it together. Yeah. But, you know, it's important to me that people understand that I don't have my shit together. And, you know, comparing your insides to other people's outsides is like comparing apples and elephants. They have no chance of matching up, you know? Yeah. And so the more people can understand that, the more they can get past those fears and insecurities that they allow to hold themselves back.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so interesting. Like, I feel like one of the biggest sort of like memeified catchphrases of the past like 5 years or so is the phrase, I feel seen.
Yeah.
You know, like just when you stop to think about that, that really encompasses the power of that. And there's always somebody on social media who's like, and part of this I think relates to just the prevalence of a lot of like social media visibility culture and performing identity on social media right now. Part of it I think relates to a lot of just like somewhat, and I say this with no connotation, good or bad, just a term, if there's a better term, somebody please inform me, but somewhat like almost micro identity politics coming out as of the past handful of years as well. But it's like from time to time you'll see somebody, and again, maybe they're a high profile person, but they're like, I am a Serbian model with a Muslim and a Christian parent who's an immigrant who was raised by gay nuns in the Midwest or something. And then like they'll just come out with it like on social media, and like a bunch of people will be like, this is fucking great. I am too. Like, my parents were like black cowboys, you know, it's more powerful than we think sometimes.
Sure.
You know?
Absolutely. Well, and that's part of the thing of Tiferet too, is the simple act of allowing ourselves to be seen. You know, of dropping our masks can be amazingly powerful for everyone around us and also for us. I mean, the idea of feeling safe enough or secure enough or trusting enough that the universe has our backs to drop our masks is powerful. And then other people get to see you being powerful, and other people get to have the potential for identifying with that humanity and that, you know, whatever little niche in the world you occupy. Because I think most people walk around feeling more alone than they're going to let on. Everybody feels, you know, everybody's head, the third, you know, that third chakra, negative ego, you know, flip side of the tree, Gevura kind of place that we have, others us. You know, we other ourselves. Mm-hmm. I don't fit in. I don't connect. Nobody understands me. And, you know, that's the root of like conflict and war and addiction and, you know, and so when we can stand at the middle of the tree, the absolute center of the tree, in all of its glory, and allow ourselves to be seen, if enough people did that, I really think that it would change things. You know, there's a reason that the Gnostics, you know, talk about the identity of Tiferet as being the Christed self, and that's a non-gendered Christed self. The bride and the bridegroom equally sit there, if you will. The spouse and the spouse. I got to figure out a new term for that. The partner and the partner, the you know, all of the essences of self, you know. But that place where we connect to others and we connect to ourselves sits in Tiferet. And that is, to me, the most powerful place on the tree. You know, once I get up above the abyss, yeah, there's power there, but it has very little connection to the 3D world. I mean, you know, when we do classes and we get up above the abyss, language becomes a really weird thing.
Yeah.
And the experience of time becomes a really weird thing. And the experience of other people becomes a really weird thing. And so it's very separate from
pandemic. Maybe we're just permanently in the upper triad because all of those things came up. So,
well, and that's an interesting concept. I kind of want to play with that, you know, because I've been talking about the pandemic as being an opportunity, or not even an opportunity, but like the paradigm shift got sped up. You know, we've been going through a paradigm shift for any number of years, but in 2020, like, it got, it's that Star Trek, like, we whipped around the sun thing, you know,
or like the hyperdrive from Star Wars, you know.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Light speed.
Yeah. So everything just ramped up. And so, sure, it's possible that everyone is getting a taste of the supernal triad. I mean, after that, you know, the quote unquote return to normalcy, which is not going to be anything like the previous normal, the old normal, is the next layer of the tree, where Keter becomes Malchut. Maybe that's what's going on. And what are the possibilities of that? Because that's kind of awesome. You know, I experience and I see, you know, my students and stuff go through, you know, like the next layer of the tree and the next layer of the tree and the next layer of the tree. But the idea that humanity as a whole gets to do that, that's a tasty concept right there. I am enjoying the heck out of that. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and I mean, it'll be interesting to see who signs on to that and
sure.
Who just like plunges into the deepest depths of denialism about the fact that we've shifted. Okay. Like, okay, sometimes it's funny because sometimes, like, well, I'm pretty real and pretty snarky on my personal social media that's not connected to anybody's business or whatever.
You?
But
really?
But recently I just flat out, like, I made an Instagram post today and I just flat out was like, hey y'all, don't be too thirsty to go back to normal. Capitalism doesn't love you back. Like, I had to say it just like that, you know? I've experienced the rush over the past 2 weeks already, and people trying to get things back into place to reopen. And I absolutely don't fault people, you know, who have been impacted as far as their survival and well-being. I am absolutely not in a place of judgment on that. But, you know, just the rush to be like, okay, and the work situation is just gonna, you know, like,
well,
get a little this again. And
you know, I think that we can ensure that we're okay, and that, you know, we are okay on a financial level and a social level and everything else without having to return to the status quo of before times. You know, we can make sure we're going to be okay. We can, in fact, make sure we're going to be more okay by entertaining the idea that perhaps how we've been doing things on a value level, you know, on an economy level, whatever you want to call it, hasn't worked. You know, it's worked for less than 1% of the population. Can we get real here? Let's value human beings as human beings, not as human doings. I mean, this is, you know, I could rant on that one forever.
Well, it's funny somewhat in a like but also funny in a like uncomfortable laughter kind of way to watch the machinations of the systems of power trying to shift back in alignment with the before times, but the people and a lot of very affected, like marginalized groups, like having their little poking sticks and being like, what are you doing? What are you doing? This isn't acceptable anymore. What the fuck are you doing? And it's very much like, you know, hot pokers in a fire. And it's like uncomfortable but funny in a weird way and cringy and like a lot of different like emotions rolled into one. And you know, along the lines of what you were just saying too, the pandemic I think was a big reveal that especially that like illusion of poverty, like there isn't enough to go around in the world, like just on a level of resources existing and not resource hoarding, which is the root of that. You know, that I think that was the big, big, big reveal. And so I think people who were really processing that big reveal, who were disenfranchised folks and marginalized folks, were like, nah, no, we're not doing this again. And it's interesting to watch it unfold.
Yeah. Yeah, I part of me wants to see what sort of accelerant we can pour on that fire.
Yes, please.
Right? I haven't quite figured out what it is yet.
Right fucking now.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be perfectly good with, you know, a flip and just kind of go, okay, so this is the new value system. It's not based on what you produce. You know, your value as a human is not based on what you produce, whether it's babies or, you know, money for other people or what. I mean, you know, change is uncomfortable, sure. We're going to change no matter what. Why don't we just get it done all at once? Let's just rip the Band-Aid off. How do we make that happen? I mean, that's, you know, that is a global paradigm shift. I'm all for it.
Energetically, I'm feeling like we're like just hovering off the cliff of that, like we're so like I personally am trying to take action steps to just continue poking it off the cliff.
sure
happily.
You know, and people need to understand that just because we're moving away from that value system, it doesn't mean that money goes away. It doesn't mean that commerce goes away. It just means that we don't value humans solely based on their output.
Right.
You know, everybody has a right to enough food and enough clean water and to the education that they desire and to health care. You know, these are all things that human beings, if we're going to value them, should have access to.
Yeah. And in case folks listening, I know a lot of people that both you and I know are already having awareness of this, but in case folks listening have not stopped to consider this, a society that bases your value on what you produce is inherently ableist.
Oh yeah.
AF.
Well, it's ableist, it's dehumanizing. It makes you a commodity, you know. On some level, whether you know it or not, in a capitalist society, somebody else owns you. You are a slave. And it may not look, you know, it may not look like the experience of an entire population that, you know, was, you know, kidnapped and brought to a country not of their choice and died in forced labor.
Here, I do want to be careful about using that term as white privileged folks, but sure. I also think it's important to think about the historical fact that the existence of what we are experiencing within this iteration was founded on chattel slavery and exploitation you know, enslaved peoples. So if we pull it back to that, I think it's
that's absolutely fair. I don't wish to
end on stealing people's land because that's relevant right now.
So Luna Pantera, who is a teacher up in the Bay Area who does a lot of really amazing spiritual womanist work, I had the privilege of sitting in on one of her workshops a number of years ago, and she's very clear on the fact that you may not see the chains on your wrists, but because we live under a patriarchy, you are under your own disadvantage in this culture. You know, she's like, she basically said, this is not a direct quote, but it's really close, is white women are as affected differently, but as affected by patriarchy and slavery as Black women are. You know, your chains look different, but you're still not free.
And I guess that also speaks to the fact that, you know, in some cases, like people who identify as white women make choices that align with the white patriarchy because they are trying to, you know, they're under the impression that they're uplifting themselves to a state of better survival. And that's not to rationalize harm. I want to be really clear about that. It's just like, oh, well, that kind of explains that a little bit better.
Well, you know, there's the idea that, so what I've seen from the people I know, the women I know who have kind of fallen into that weird group to me, is if I do this, I get to continue being relevant. And if you're already feeling like you have to justify your relevancy, you're not free.
No.
you're just not.
No.
As a human being, you are relevant. Period.
Yeah.
That is a complete sentence.
I read something today, actually, that was kind of mind-blowing to me as a white person, and as somebody who, you know, introductorily is familiar with, you know, some North American indigenous worldviews, very kind of superficially, but I actually like legit full-blown learned some stuff by reading this today. So in a compilation of essays called Queer Magic, which is, there's writings by various authors in there, and I will give you a link so that folks can follow this. But one of the essays in there is called An Interview with Clyde Hall, Shoshone Two-Spirit Elder. And boy, did I learn some really, really, really interesting shit in that. So Clyde Hall talks about the fact that, you know, past like couple decades or so, in a lot of North American indigenous cultures, there was not even actually the concept of like two-spirit or anything like that in the way that a little bit of a revival of it has been framed. Because if you grew up with the traditions and a lot of the nations, they looked at you from when you were a child. They assessed how can you be your best self in our society, and they let you pursue that. So some folks just took male and female roles or didn't have a gender or what have you. Some nations didn't necessarily have a term for it until real recently, because there was not the sense of othering.
Right.
Involved. And I was like, head explode gif. Like, I mean, not really, because it's like, okay, yes, that is, hello, white colonizer culture.
Absolutely.
Like, I'm not in denial about that. But the way that Hall detailed the information and talked about the nuance of the fact that, you know, it just, it wasn't a larger concept because you just were who you were. And the nation wasn't trying to make you a cog in a wheel of production. They looked at the core of who you were as a person, and that was cool. You know, bodies were not, when you're talking about really, you know, history, like around the time of the first white settlers, like bodies were not stigmatized and sexualized necessarily in a way that made the white colonizers' heads explode and clutch their pearls. You know, it was it's just a different worldview. It's one that makes more sense, frankly.
Sure.
And
be who you are and fuck all those labels.
Yeah. And so, like, really just chewing on, I'll probably go back and read the essay that it was an interview, excuse me, done by somebody who goes by the name Wolfie. Yeah, like, I'll probably go back and read it again, because it was like, whoa, hello. And it was, you know, very much in that style of just sitting and talking to an elder. And, you know, I don't actually know what this person's pronouns are, but, you know, they brought up the fact that the two-spirit term is a fairly recent thing. And maybe there's also been like a need to congeal more identity around that because of being a marginalized group by like white colonizer directed society, you know, because a lot of labels have come up, been needful for that reason, you know. But it was just so like, whoa, okay, hello, like perspective check.
Right.
So, yeah.
You talking about the interview just kind of like triggered a whole bunch of like pew, pew, pew in my head. I'm part of a queer witchy book club. And two of the recent books that we've read were Arcane Perfection, which is a collection of essays, again, about queer identity within the magic community, and Becoming Dangerous. Which
I love Becoming Dangerous.
Yeah. Becoming Dangerous is awesome because it includes like issues of ableness and all of that kind of stuff, which I really grooved on.
There's a lot of like trans and non-binary folks, yeah, and variously gendered folks who also intersect with sex working and, you know, able-bodiedness and things like it really covered a lot of, honestly, if I'm being honest, when it comes to written things in the witchy community, I get a little apprehensive going in because I feel like white cis women identified people have entitled themselves to so much space as the mouthpiece of the community, but I'm glad to see that gradually shifting.
Yeah. This last hangout time book club meeting, I don't know what to call it because it's fairly informal and right now it's happening on Zoom, so but we talked about kind of the difference between Arcane Perfection and Becoming Dangerous, because Arcane Perfection is very much has a ton of like gender identity, trans, NB kind of stuff. And it's curated by, they use they, them pronouns. They were identified at birth. My understanding is they were identified at birth as male. And so that's part of their experience. And Becoming Dangerous was edited by two persons with female first names. I don't remember off the top of my head. But the thing that's different is that Becoming Dangerous is so much more inclusive. You know, the inclusivity in Arcane Perfection is kind of awesome. And yet there are some huge blind spots in it. And we started talking about the fact that the curator of it and their experience in the world was very white male. It was very default. Mm-hmm. And so the idea of needing to expand a little bit more past the things that made sense to them as being different, but still in their sphere, mm-hmm. probably didn't even occur to them, you know, whereas Becoming Dangerous is so inclusive.
Yeah.
You know, it touches on so many different things, and it's very womanist, feminist, you know, it's from a place of we already understand what it's like to be othered. And Arcane Perfection, everybody in it, everybody who's given pieces to it, obviously understands being othered. And I'm not sure that the editor even thought that they were missing anything. Whereas it feels very much in Becoming Dangerous that the editors tried very hard to make that circle as large as possible.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I can't speak to the Arcane Perfection book, but that's one thing I found very satisfying about Becoming Dangerous.
Yeah, the things that are in the poetry and the essays and everything and the interviews that are in Arcane Perfection are awesome. It's just as a collected work, it's got blind spots, mm-hmm. which I didn't necessarily feel from Becoming Dangerous. We'll have to make sure to include links to both of those books as well. Yes. Arcane Perfection, by the way, is available as a download, and it's one of those pay what you want sort of things, which I always enjoy. There's a level of trust, and again, of moving away from the idea of commodification that I appreciate. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I try to do that with like some of my meditation stuff is, you know, donate.
Yeah, one of the bigger subject, sort of hot topic subject matters I've seen being discussed like over the past, you know, 5 to 10 years or so. And I remember seeing like a real big article on this that came out some years ago, like a handful-ish of years ago, maybe even pre-Trump administration, but I'm not entirely sure, maybe like somewhere between like 15 and 17 or something. But a pressure upon, I guess, people who would largely fall into the millennial category to like hyper monetize all of their skills. And mm-hmm. it's really interesting because a lot of folks like, trying to survive through the pandemic who may have had some spotty or none like financial aid from various governments, I feel like found themselves in a lot of, oh my God, like which of my skills can I hyper monetize like right now? And I think it's a situation that continues now. I think it's increased pressure, like as far as the ways that people use social media. I always at least a little bit get in trouble for how I use my Instagram because I'll use it to like publicize a thing I'm doing, like I'll use my personal profile to like publicize like a thing I'm doing or like an art, you know, project my partner and I made or whatever, but sometimes it'll just be like a selfie post that's full of the F word and I'm not trying to sell you anything and I'm like, okay, like I just got to say something, y'all. and I've had like audits done of my Instagram and you know, your aesthetic is a little bit all over the place. Like that's the way they'll put it. Like, whatever, like my asshole's a little bit all over the place.
Like what? I am always confused by people who feel entitled to look at my personal expression on any sort of social media and to give me their opinion on it. Like, well, I'll give a fuck.
I'll be clear. These are situations in which, like, it was a coach person who okay. I coached and hired for this person. So
right.
it was solicited.
Okay.
But it also was not like feedback that I was very surprised about.
Well, I mean, you're an eclectic human. Of course your expression is going to be eclectic. I mean, you know, I mean, it says full on my Instagram, like my little bio blurb is something like the internet is for quotes and cats and food. Yeah. And I'm fairly sure I do say fuck on my Instagram, so.
Well, and I also, especially in the age of social media, I'm still kind of upset by this expectation that like folks need to stay apolitical on social media, especially post-pandemic. You know, there's a way to talk about social justice issues without being like hateful or violent, obviously.
Sure. Sure.
And if I were, you know, an employer or a client and I saw like political stuff with like hateful or violent languaging, yeah, that's a consideration. But like, there's a way to get political, I think, without insulting anybody's humanity or, you know, coming to it from a place of, you know, intentionally being aggro. And you know, I think a lot of that also hooks into like white fragility and people with privilege fragility.
Yeah, and I mean honestly, we're human beings, we are political.
Yes
human we can't get past that
are political.
Yeah, you know, politics is about giving a shit about, you know, what's being done in your name. It's about wanting to influence how things turn out and what efforts are made on a larger than personal scale. You know, even if I only like ever do stuff in my neighborhood, I'm still being political. Absolutely. Humans are political.
Even if a person only has the physical able-bodiedness to do internet activism, they're still being political, or for that matter, to do art. Like maybe the place where they feel safe because they feel their safety is threatened other ways is to make political art. Sure. Absolutely valid. Sure. Absolutely political.
Well, and for people who say like, oh, I don't get into politics, I'm not political, that's a political choice.
Yes.
And it's a political choice of privilege.
Yes.
Because to say, oh, I don't get myself dirty with that means I don't have to because I'm in a privileged class.
Oh my God, yes. Yes. I have an extended rant about this, but
I'm a little older than perhaps some of our listenership and certainly older than you, Irina, but in 1987 when the stock market crashed, I was in college and I was freaking out about it because I was like, this is going to affect a lot of stuff. And my roommate said, oh, I don't want to talk about it. That's politics. I'm like, it's the economy. And what kind of privilege do you have that you don't feel the need to talk about choices and how they affect the economy?
Well, and I want to get nuanced here for a minute too, because one thing that has come up, and I will skirt around this without pulling up direct stuff, but one thing that has come up specifically with like the Israel-Palestine stuff is in certain ways, some folks are actually taking a step back because they are trying to learn a little bit more about the situation right now. And I personally, you know, people listening to the show may disagree, and that is absolutely okay. But I personally appreciate the step to do that because number one, you are making a choice to like check a potential knee-jerk reaction. You are making a choice to respond rather than react, potentially. You're making the choice to just be open to new information.
Mm-hmm.
Which is always a good thing, right?
Yeah.
You're making the choice to like, maybe that causes you to take a moment and just check in with like the needs of people around you who are more directly affected, but maybe in making that human connection, you also learn more about the situation. Maybe also, because this is relevant to the social media stuff you and I have been talking about, like maybe also you're just taking space away from something public facing to process your stuff in the knowledge that, like, with the intersections of privilege you might have, it could be re-traumatizing to people, or it could be feeding an algorithm of like perpetually upsetting folks, right? Like to consciously walk in the world of navigating politics and political act. I like, so Sonia Renee Taylor likes to refer to people getting very energetic on the internet or riled up, really, as being activated. And I don't think it came from like a euphemistic thing. I love it because it's a wonderfully loving, like, okay, I see that this is coming from a place of passion, but let's stop, breathe, ground, take a minute, recognize, right?
Sure.
And just recognize, like, how am I taking up space? How might you be taking up space? Like, what are my intersections of both oppression and privilege in this scenario, right? So I think it is important to get nuanced as far as, like, approaching, quote unquote, how people choose to get or not get political. So I think we have to be careful about making assumptions. But when somebody does make the active statement of like, oh, I just stay out of it. Cringe.
I am a huge fan of people educating themselves. And, you know, if somebody says, well, I can't discuss this right now, I need to get more information. Great. But just saying like, oh, I can't get involved in that.
Right,
it's like,
And maybe even somebody hearing that on this show, like that hashes out some terms for them where they're like, oh, maybe the next time somebody kind of confronts me, I can say, hey, I'm in the process of learning more about that, or I'm open to educational info. Like if you have labor that other people have done on this, like I'm open, you know, maybe that just light bulbs for somebody else that's a possibility even.
Yeah.
You know?
It's okay to say, I don't know enough about this topic.
Yes. Yes.
But that's not avoidant.
So yeah, we want to be nuanced about the difference between saying, I don't know enough about this topic, and saying, oh, I can't concern myself with that.
Which, you know, is privilege. I mean, I want to stop myself. Because there is a place where someone could say, I can't concern myself with that right now, or I don't concern myself with these things, that comes from my vital needs are not being met and I don't have the spoons for that.
Yeah, that was the next thing I was going to say, is it can intersect with people's abledness, but there's also micro nuance within that, because number one, yes, it can, but number two, another option is maybe they're just spiritually bypassing. Also, like, this is a real delicate, nuanced thing that comes up a lot when we talk about like Black and Indigenous liberation specifically, but in general, like it's been talked about by a number of Black folks on social media who do deliberate, conscious engaging with education that is aimed at a wide audience, but in particular white folks as well. A lot of these, and mostly they are Black femme people, femme and women aligned people, who are doing education actively in their spaces, get pushback from white folks, and particularly like white femme people and women who invoke their own mental health when they are in some cases using that as a mask for like actual discomfort and their own kind of racial discomfort and white fragility that's coming up. So it can be really tricky. You know, there's not a wide brush to paint every situation with, but I think we're trying to name that this can really be varied.
Sure.
And with that bit of wisdom, it looks like we are out of time.
Yay, we didn't have to talk about too much news.
Seriously, you know, if the most news-ish I get this week is talking about Devin Nunez's cow, I'm good. So we want to thank y'all for being here or for listening. And if you want to be part of the discussion next month, hit us up. We are totally into the idea of having people come and be part of the audience live and, you know, do like a little discussion with the audience kind of thing. You don't have to have any experience with Kabbalah. If you have some, that's also okay. Come hang out. If this is a podcast that you groove on, we'd love to groove with you.
Yeah, and we are, as far as our record date every month, we're trying to stay on a consistent schedule, but in the process of potentially shifting our monthly record day. So we will keep you posted about that on our socials and everything like that.
Yes. Okay, well, thank you all very much. I have been Ayama Natara.
Thank you, and I am Irina Zara.
Thank you. Have a wonderful month.
All music on this podcast is from Carpe Diem by the Science and Queen Jet Matus.